For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
What is up, Wizards fans? Welcome to another Believe in Wizards podcast. I'm Matt Moderno. He's Jihadi White. We're a week away from the NBA draft, so we'll talk about that a little bit here. The Celtics just won title, so we'll talk a little bit about, you know, what we can learn from that, team building, philosophy, all that kind of good stuff. But just first off, Jihadi, how you doing? How's Father's Day? Look like you had a good time with family and stuff, but how was it?
Oh, I'm good. Father's Day always good. You know, we as fathers, we get that one day.
That's right. It's your day.
Know, but people have to be obligated to actually give us some credit.
I love that. Yeah.
Actually give us some credit. So yeah, I'm good. And then, you know, also, you know, you get to spend it with your father, then spend it with my sons.
That's cool.
So they're just generations of coming together and enjoying the men in our family, which is always a good time.
Did your dad hoop also?
Yeah, my father was a hooper. Yeah, he played he played NAIA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's cool. I have three generations of ballers in the house. The ball talk with the St. Louis hometown kid Tatum in the finals. Man. Probably pretty cool.
And that's what it's all. That's all it is ball talk.
Yeah.
And it's like a show. You know who has the most, who understands basketball the most. So you know it's generational. So you know. Sometimes, you know, you're the father, the older guy sees the game a little bit differently than you do. Then the younger players see the game differently than I do because, you know, the game changes and the game within the game changes. So that's how that works. And before you know it, it's a battle of who knows basketball the best.
Right, exactly. From what lines
I just raise my hand and say, hey, I play in the NBA, so everybody be quiet.
Maybe the kids will get there one day, but until then, you've got the ultimate trump card there.
Right.
That's cool. Yeah, my dad is, he loves every sport except basketball, so he tolerates that because I like it so much. But his one question for me was, have the Wizards drafted anybody yet? So the draft is next week. He goes, oh, I heard it's the worst draft ever. I was like, you thought that was the most Wizards thing? You know, that's as little as he checks in, he knew that little detail of, hey, we're bad the wrong year. So math checks out there. You never know. We'll see. Hopefully we can make it one of the better drafts.
Just because it's not a good draft doesn't mean that still isn't top picks.
Exactly.
You know, I look at it that way.
Yep. No, that's the way to do it. Hey, Giannis came out of the other worst draft of the century. Right. So I wouldn't mind something like him on the roster.
And sometimes a draft like this reveals the cream of the crop better. The cream of the crop stand out so much easier.
Mm-hmm.
So, and with the Wizards place where we are right now, we'd rather be in a draft that's like this, actually.
This is the good draft to have a good front office. So I think we're going to see what these guys are all about. We'll get a little bit more into that, just kind of the guys they worked out here in a second. But as always, we're brought to you by Stateside Vodka and their Surfside Hard Iced Teas, and brought to you by Bet Online. It's your number one source for all your summer sports. You can bet on WNBA games if you want. Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese rivalry is worth betting on in the future here. Then you get the latest stats, news, scores available for your favorite teams. the latest odds lines, including latest matchup reports, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to the website today or use your mobile device and bet online where the game starts. Just two quick things I want to read here. We love five-star reviews on the show. If you haven't ever left us a review, there's always time to remedy that. But from M. Jax Jr., this is my favorite Wizards podcast by far. First and foremost, I love the consistency. Obviously, I know all podcast hosts have lives outside of a given show, but a lot of Wizards podcasts I've listened to throughout the years have no consistent schedules and episodes. An episode could drop one day, and the next one might not drop 3 weeks later. Believe in Wizards is very consistent, and during grad school in California, it was something I look forward to every week to make me feel connected to home. That's awesome. M. Jax Jr., we appreciate you. Glad we could give you a little taste of the D.C. area here. And then the other one we got was from the real OG Bobby. Excellent insight, clearly educated opinions, and solid guests, hopefully for the future of this franchise, and hope this podcast gets to see the team's grind come to fruition. Go Wizards. So we really appreciate that. You know, this is a labor of love for us. So you guys taking the time to do that means it's extra motivation to keep going. So thanks and shout out those guys.
Yeah, guys, we try to keep it consistent for you. And believe it or not, you know, speaking for myself, we enjoy doing this just as much as you enjoy it. So
yeah, absolutely.
I'm glad you're out there enjoying it.
Yeah, it helps just to know somebody's getting something out of it too. So it's a little extra fuel for it. Also gets my wife off my case if I do a couple podcasts in a week a little bit. Hey, people actually listen to this thing. So that helps to have that ammo. So thank you all. Jahadi, the Wizards workouts, we used to get like a press release every time there was a new workout group from the old regime of here's who we're bringing in, what days, you know, who's going together. You could tell the structure of it. Oh, is there going to be a one-on-one or, you know, individual workout or a three-on-three group, that sort of thing. We're not hearing that now. Everything is sort of like secondhand reporting. I've heard about a couple lower level guys from some of these lower tier agents I know where their guys are going to be coming into town, but never full workout groups. A lot of times they don't even know who their guys are going to be in a full group with yet. So seems like they're keeping this one a lot more close to the vest. That's something that, you know, OKC was notorious for. So we're seeing that maybe, you know, come over with these new guys. But we do have some names that have come out. Alex Sarr has been in. Donovan Klingon from UConn has been in. G League Ignite, Modest Brazelis has been in. Colorado and younger brother of Jalen Williams, Cody Williams has been in. Tyler Smith, also of the G League Ignite, has been in. So those are probably the highest profile names of the group that I've caught so far. Those are the ones probably likely to go in the lottery. Just any thoughts on those kind of guys so far? Any kind of takeaways or common theme you see from those names coming in? They're all kind of forward / centers, which I thought was interesting. None of the guards have been in yet.
Well, they're all bigs and all forward / centers. Some guys are more versatile than others, right? Yep. So, which means it looks like they're really trying to target size,
mm-hmm.
right? And so, obviously, to me, the best guy out of the two, in my opinion, is Alex Sarr.
Sure.
You know, he's long, he's athletic, mm-hmm. Very physical. You know, he got physical, you know, he's rim protected.
Yep.
You know, and like you were mentioning before we started podcast about the guy, the big center from Atlanta.
Oh, Clint Capella. Yep.
Capella. To me, if you get a Alex Sarr type, you won't need a Capella type to me. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I really like my second favorite out of these five guys is Modest.
Yeah, he's pretty good. I'm assuming you saw him on the prep circuit and stuff too.
Yeah, or? I like him a lot. You know, I think he's probably the most natural hooper.
Okay.
Out of all the guys that they're looking at, even for his size,
mm-hmm.
you can always see a guy's natural hooping ability, the feel for the game, the natural twitch that he has.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the most versatile guy out of these guys too. So
let me ask you a question about him real quick, because I didn't really see him at all in any of the high school levels. Whether it's EYBL or whatever the case may be, but I've seen him a decent amount with the G League Ignite, and I've talked about this on the show before. That was a weird fit, no real point guard, a lot of forwards. That just kind of the roster construction seemed to kind of hold him back a little bit. But I've heard people that cover high school basketball at a high level say like Modest was like Lamar Odom on the high school scene. He was like playmaking and grabbing and going, and throwing like full court, you know, bounce passes to people in traffic. Is that kind of more how you saw him as like a playmaker type?
Like I said, he's the most natural hooper. He's probably the guy that has the most instinct for the game. Just in every facet, like in every lane of the game. Passing, facilitating, reading, cutting, spreading the floor, running the floor, feel like can get downhill, you know, dribbling full court. To me, he's a guaranteed scorer type, right? He can fit in any system type.
Yeah.
So I think between him, I would almost take him number one.
Wow. Okay.
Like when that's awesome. Over Sar, depending on, you know, what the feel of what we need. It seemed like the Wizards are more targeted the big, but you don't have a guy like this. And if you really trying to move that Kuzma, you know, spot out,
yeah, it seems like he could fill that
perfect person to put in that spot.
Yeah.
I think he's even more versatile scorer than Kuzma. Not as far as just like, he feels more like a Tatum to me, like a longer Tatum. Yeah.
Okay. That would be huge then. So he's going to be like probably my last guy I do a deep dive on between now and the draft next week. Of just, I need to go back. I need to watch some high school tape. I need to try to like get any preconceived ignite bias I had out of my head here, because I've heard that from now multiple people whose opinion I trust, you know, obviously including yourself. So it's the Ignite experience was weird, right? Like he's playing grown men. They're kind of bodying him around a little bit. He looked a little sloppy with the ball, a little unsure of what to do. And you didn't see that sort of natural fluidity you're talking about as much. But if that's there and now in like a freewheeling NBA setting, he can kind of get back to that. That's a much more intriguing guy. And the best kind of NBA teams have that floor spacing, switchable. You know, maybe he can guard some bigs once he gets stronger, but he can also switch on the wings and spread the floor and do it all. Like that becomes really important.
Yeah, he can be a versatile 3 and 4 to me. And he had if any guy who has the most upside, he has the most upside of growth because he can grow in more directions.
Yeah. I'm coming around here then. So that's going to be my next, like I said, big deep dive. Just a question in the chat here for you, Jihadi. Dasan asked, where would Bilal go in this year's draft? Would he still be floating around 7 or would he go maybe top 3, maybe even top 1?
So what Bilal are we talking about? We're talking about the Bilal that we saw during the draft?
I think so.
We're talking about Bilal we see now at this point.
Last year's guy, I would say, probably, based on the...
Bilal was a sleeper even then. You know, no one really knew about him. He wasn't the guy that was really on the radar until you started looking at Wembanyama.
Yeah.
So, and when he was on the radar, he really came off as more of a tall guard. So it depends on how many teams really had the need for a tall guard. Now with the Wizards, he's not even playing a guard at all. So, which says a lot. Says that his guard skills and his guard instincts needed to be higher for the NBA. Yeah,
they've got a ways to go.
Right. So, but you wouldn't know that then by draft time as much. So, you know, I think he would probably go top 10, but lower in the top 10.
It's interesting, right? We saw him make a big jump in a short amount of time last year. So, based on that, he'd probably still have some question marks if this had just been a year later. But then if he'd had another year of development in the French League and had shown another like jump forward, that's maybe a guy that could have gotten himself into that top 3 combo this year. So to your original question,
he may not have gone to the NBA at all. That's only true. Reason we're even we considered him because we actually happened to see him while looking at someone else.
Yeah, he was always a guy that people talked about for the 2024 draft. So that really, the eyes that Wembanyama brought, to your point, really kind of sped up his whole eval process.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's interesting. Looking at it now, I think is like a Ron Holland or Cody Williams or one of these kind of like long wings, is maybe even Mata. So like somewhere in that 4, 5, 6, 7 range, I think he's probably in that tier of guys, no matter what. You know, that you could make a case at any point there, I think.
It'd be around that Cody Williams type space.
Yeah, I think that's right. The next couple names they got on the list here, Trenton Flowers, he played in Australia's NBL this year. Tristan Newton, obviously back-to-back national championship guard. So an older guard there. Antonio Reeves from Kentucky, sharpshooter, another older guard there. You've got Keenan Blackshear in Nevada, another older guard there, senior guard with a little bit of playmaking. You've got Taron Armstrong, played in Australia's NBL this year too. So they must be really scouting the NBL here. But a lot of these other names that they've got left are older veteran guards that probably aren't going to be in play before like the 51st pick, or are maybe even undrafted type. So really nobody, Tyler Smith is maybe the only guy on this list that could be in play at 26. So I'm a little surprised we just haven't heard more names kind of in that realm of player yet. Because the top pick, it seems pretty obvious who the guys are. Obviously you want to get that right, but also 26, it's a pretty wide net of players you have to be able to evaluate. So I'm kind of surprised we haven't seen more names for that level yet.
True, it is, but you don't know what position you're going. So it depends first what position you're going for, and then what's available. Like you keep seeing naming the older guards is because how desperate are we for a major guard, right? And believe it or not, other than being undersized, I think in our guard situation, we're not bad, even though I feel like we're going to lose Tyus.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so, yeah, then again, yeah, we need another guard. But I don't really feel like in the guard situation is bad. Also, if you look at the NBA now, the bigs used to be, bigs are becoming obsolete. And next thing that's becoming obsolete is guards.
Is everybody is a 6'9" guard now?
Anybody bringing up the ball now? So you don't really need you need a shooting guard more than you need a point guard.
Sure.
Right? And everything is systematic now. So with the systems that are running, you don't really need a guard. Think about who brings the ball up for Dallas this entire playoffs. It wasn't Kyrie.
Right. Yep. Luka Doncic does
it. Luka a guard?
Yeah, he's kind of a hybrid.
Point guard.
He's kind of a hybrid. He's like the same way LeBron was a big playmaker type.
Exactly. Right. So now, to me, if I'm watching the NBA, how things are going, especially if you watch these finals, everything is concepts.
Okay.
Right. Everything is concepts within a system, right? So now your system, your offense is concept. Right, which means now you're just trying to find out the perfect people to plug and play. Not meaning the best players.
Sure.
The perfect players, the right people for your concept. Look at Boston.
Mm-hmm.
You was wondering why. Well, why would they go get Derrick White if he fit the concept perfect?
Same with Porzingis, you know.
Right. Why would they get rid of Smart and bring in Jrue Holiday? Because he fits the concept perfect. Yeah. Like you say, Porzingis. Why would they fight for Porzingis? So now, what is Washington going to do? What is Keith going to do? Is he going to bring to traditional basketball, or he's going to say, all right, we're going to have a concept, and then we just want to make sure we have the right guys to fit in the piece, piece to fit in the concept. Now, that's the way it's going, hopefully.
The only other name I neglected to mention there that's been reported on is Minnesota's Cam Christie, younger brother of Max Christie. He was a freshman at Minnesota this year, like a 6'5"-ish shooter, essentially. He didn't really do a whole lot else for Minnesota this year, but he's still young. So I think that there's a lot of upside there that people see. And similar with Max Christie, where he didn't do a ton at the college level, he did more than Max did, but you're basically drafting him on potential of here's a guy who could probably come in and really shoot it. So. He and Tyler Smith are probably those two guys that seems like they're targeting. And Smith is another guy, 6'8"-ish, but brings shooting, you know, at his position and things like that, too. So them knowing that they need to add a couple shooters here, I think is refreshing to see at least too.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we definitely need more shooting anyway. So if that we have to be able to spread the floor.
Yeah.
And I think we didn't do a good job of that this year. Where we, you know, we didn't have a lot of guys who could spread the floor at every spot. And, you know, so I think it'd be good to kind of target some shooters as well.
Yeah, they were near the bottom in a lot of three-point metrics. So I think beefing that up seems like a good move here. Bullets Nation asked in the chat, how do we feel about Terrence Shannon Jr.? So obviously he was crazy productive in the Big Ten this year and is a multi-year college player. To me, I'd be a little less interested in using a first round pick on a guy that'll be almost 24, you know, by the time the season starts. It's just the time frame doesn't make sense to me. I think he's a dude that if Denver takes him in the late 20s or something like that, he's like an immediate day one help for them. But he's a downhill scorer, doesn't really do a whole lot else for you. I just think the fit isn't ideal in Washington personally. It's not really a knock on him as a prospect, though.
Yeah, I think at this time, at that moment now, it's a young man's league, you know, it's a youth league, and then you need those 3 years to really, really develop and process things and become the player you are. Somebody that's coming in at 24, 25, you pretty much don't know how impressionable they'll be to be able to take in that information at that time and right. change their game. So, yeah, I think he's probably just a little bit too old to be considered like a top draft.
Yeah, it's just for me, it's honestly, I just want guys I can get more excited about, too. And if you're already 23 and a half or whatever, I think you're probably pretty close to your ceiling. So it's just a little less exciting. So selfishly, it's a pick I'd like a little bit less. But watch him go be like first team all rookie this year because he's a grown man who can put the ball in the basket. We talked about this a little bit here, but I just kind of want to circle back to it. Obviously, mentioned the Celtics winning the NBA championship there, so shout out to them and your other hometown guy, Jason Tatum. That's pretty cool. But tweet from former Wizards assistant coach Dean Oliver that I thought was interesting. He talked about the Celtics' domination this season. They had 3 wins of 50 or more points this season. It's the most in NBA history. 4 wins of 40 or more points. It's tied for the most this year with the Oklahoma City Thunder. They had 10 wins of 30 plus points, which is tied with the 1971 Bucks for the most in NBA history. They had 17 wins by 25 plus points, and that's the most in NBA history. So people talk about how they kind of waltzed through the playoffs and they had this easier run or whatever. They smashed everybody all year. And that's with guys that were sort of limited by injuries. You didn't get a full Porzingis. You didn't get a full Horford. Like, they built a team where they didn't have to rely on those guys to like slog through the regular season. All night, every night. I guess just, are there any takeaways from how they built their team that you would like to see applied to how the Wizards are trying to build out their team?
A lot. A lot. I mean, like you said, every guy in every position with the Celtics could do at least three things. They can shoot, they can mm-hmm. drive, they can facilitate.
Yep.
Yeah.
Defend, most of them too.
And defend, so forth. And they're all two-way players.
Yep.
Right? So they're all mm-hmm. two-way players. But if you notice, other than Jaylen Brown, to me,
mm-hmm.
every guy on the Celtics team honed their game inward, mm-hmm. like to the point to where they say, okay, I'm going to do less than what my natural game is.
Yeah, they sacrificed, right?
Right, sacrificed to fit what we're doing here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Derek White maybe was taking less shots, but was being was able to really move on offense more, get the ball moving. Drew Holiday ended up being a guy. Think about in the playoffs, he had more layups right under the basket.
Pretty right? easy stuff, yeah.
Then and he's the smallest guy out there. You know,
yeah, that was creative. I liked that. Right, his dunker spot made sense.
Right, so they all sacrificed. And they all understood the sacrifice for the bigger picture, mm-hmm. right? But they all had the versatility to do it, everything within the concept, even with sacrificing, right? Mm-hmm. Like Jason Tatum, he was usually getting you 30. Mm-hmm. He became the ultimate facilitator,
mm-hmm.
right? When he could just shot every shot up. But what he did was, okay, let me learn this. So they all sacrificed, but they made sure. But to me, what the Celtics did was made sure they really got the right pieces. They didn't look for a lot of all-stars. Mm-hmm. They didn't look like, what was it, Brad Stevens?
Brad Stevens, yeah.
Brad Stevens, he has a knack for and a feel for exactly what he needs in that spot, mm-hmm. right? You know, and if you have a knack and an eye and feel for the game like Brad Stevens and understanding the exact player we need, the exact mentality we need, the exact, sacrifice, somebody who can sacrifice that we need.
Yep.
You can build a team like that because I was saying, the reason being is if you look at the Celtics, they were running a concept. Type of motion more than just a
not know, ISO heavy
yeah, ISO free field motion. So everybody was role replacing or mm-hmm. you know, okay, I'm a penetrating pitch, so I'm gonna draw. I know which two men I'm drawing. So okay, then that means that middle guy is open, not the wing guy, not the top guy, because mm-hmm. then the middle guy slashes down. If not, Drew Holiday goes into the dunker spot. If not, Derek White lifts up, right? I mean, it's crazy. And if it's a pick and roll, it's role replacement on the pick and roll. Absolutely. So I'm just watching it like, wow. Wow. Right? And they're moving so in tune and on the string to where it's impossible to guard. So
that's a good point.
I would like to say, okay, let's adopt a concept first of all. Mm-hmm. And then we've put the right puzzle pieces and like the right chess pieces in those concepts. And that's how Boston just, because you already got Tatum and Jaylen Brown. And the only person that really didn't sacrifice his game at all was Jaylen Brown because you didn't need him to.
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody had to go kind of alpha scorer for, because well, he had the best matchup.
He's the top defender.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets downhill so fast and so powerful that you can't stop it anyway. What are you going to try to take away? What are you going to try to say? Hey, we need you to kind of ease off. Nah, don't need to ease off. And he's such a stoic, like sharp, like leader.
Yeah.
Concise. No. Like, it's just the perfect fit.
I think if you're Denny Avdia and you watch this playoffs, Jaylen Brown is the guy I'd pay attention to. This is a guy that everyone said last year in the playoffs, like he literally cannot drive left. And that's something we've said about Denny for a couple of years. And this year they dared Jaylen Brown to drive left. And guess what? He did it and he made him pay for it a bunch. So that's something you can add and work on. And this is a guy that, you know, already made $55 million a year and is still in the lab adding parts to his game too. So I think that was pretty cool to see. The other part I thought that you hit on there that I think was worth circling back to is just they either added veteran guys who know what it takes to win because they've won on other teams, or guys that were clearly hungry to come in and actually win. Like a Porzingis, you know, this is a dude that he's been an all-star. He's been a 20-point per game scorer. The only thing he hasn't done yet is win at a high level. And it's also someone that you could tell had the mindset of being willing to sacrifice. He did that in Washington. He let other guys take fourth quarter shots. Like they seem to just kind of like, you know, like pull all the right cards or, you know, play all the right notes to like make these guys kind of all fit in together. And that's, there's a lot of mouths to feed conceivably. So like I said, guys had to sacrifice and they all sacrificed like a little bit kind of equally, as opposed to like, you talk about like the LeBron Wade Bosch guys, like the third guy on the LeBron teams always took the biggest hit. Whereas this group, like everybody gave up maybe like 10% off the top. And that seemed to be like a little easier because they were all sacrificing together. So that sort of like democratic approach to how we do this. And then certain guys, when they had the right matchup, then they got empowered to like, okay, now you go cook. Like Porzingis, like pull this big dude away from the basket and shoot every time you're open. Like, they all got their moment to shine still, I think, which is cool.
Yeah, I agree. Because I think I look at it as Brad Stevens also recruited a mentality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's smart.
I'm going to recruit a specific mentality. Because off top, first thing we're going to ask when they come in is to sacrifice. Mm-hmm. We need you to understand that. Yep. That takes a certain mentality because NBA, that's the worst thing you can almost ask a guy to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, and then also, what I also like, you got to get a coach, Mazzulla's credit too.
Yeah.
How quickly he was playing the chess game with Jason Kidd.
Mm-hmm.
You seen him out as soon as Porzingis came out, he was pulling the big out.
Mm hmm.
I'm going to pull the big out. So let's keep going to Porzingis right out the gate.
Yep.
Right now. So, because we know next game, they're going to make an adjustment.
Mm-hmm. But
for right now, this is our biggest advantage because they don't expect this.
Yep.
Right. And then they made the adjustment, you know. So I love the chess game Mazzulla was playing as well. They have a lot of good pieces in that organization.
I forget which Celtics player talked about the story. It was probably Derek White, I think, when they asked Joe Mazzulla or congratulated him being like a coach of the year candidate. And he was just like, who cares? I think when you've got a coach that sets the tone of like winning or bust and nothing else matters here. Like the Wizards were throwing victory parades, you know, because Brad, was third team all NBA and stuff like that in a 30 win season. And that's not a knock on Brad or whatever, but the priorities here were clearly not always like winning or nothing else. You know, there was other stuff that they were willing to promote. And you didn't see that with this Boston team because one, they've been so close a couple years in a row. It's like, now we have to win or else. And then you get like, you talked about Brad Stevens, the recruiter. I think that's really interesting because this is a guy with a college recruiting background of like on a college team that, will a guy come in and be okay being the ninth man? You know, does he know he's being recruited to be the ninth man? And if so, does he still want to come here? Like, I feel like that actually makes some sense for how you build out like a championship NBA roster too, having that ability, you know, to see how those guys fit together, I think is really kind of a cool wrinkle to that too.
Yeah. Yeah. And like you said, it was winning a bus. At this time, they all knew what the mission was at the beginning of the season.
Yep.
Yeah, and anything less would be a failure.
Mm-hmm.
So to put those pieces together and have everybody on the same accord of it's only one option.
Mm-hmm.
Only one thing that makes us successful is winning the finals.
Yeah.
Right. And it seemed like they all understood that it was on that train from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
you know, and you never really heard or saw any wrinkles or any rattles or any breaks in the chain within the organization or any murmurs or mumbles about anything back.
Nothing. Yeah.
Right. They were all so, and it was just like, just right in line. It was all in line to understand what they needed to do. And if you really bought it, everybody said they didn't play anybody. Yeah. And you just said, talked about how many games they won over it. And that's why you're like, well, this guy's not playing well. This guy, he's not playing the entire game. He gets to sit down in the third quarter when everybody else on every other team get to stay out there and coach because they were so much of a machine at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are all great points here. Merle in the chat said, hit the like and subscribe button for us. Yes, thank you, Merle. We appreciate that. Everybody, please do that for us. This helps us get the word out about the show to everybody. Josue said in the chat that for all their talk about offense, I believe the main catalyst for the Celtics this year was their defense. Thought that was really interesting too. Like they had these guys kind of like perfectly thought out of how they could best use them. You had the two sort of point of attack guards, you had two wings, and then you had kind of funneled them toward Porzingis, or you hid Porzingis on a lesser offensive player and let him be kind of like this free safety, like roving shot blocker, rim deterrent piece. So I thought that was kind of cool. The other piece I liked about this Celtics team is just, there's continuity there. Like obviously they added a couple new guys, but this core has been together for multiple years. And I think them not panicking to blow it up actually helped them. Like they moved a few, pieces. Like you obviously swapped out Marcus Smart, you bring in a Holiday and Porzingis and guys like that. But the main core are guys that have been there and fit a couple years. And I do think that is kind of an underrated thing with these NBA teams sometimes of just like, we'll blow the whole thing up and it'll just be so easy. Like having guys, like it takes a few years to get over the hump. And now once they've done it, I wouldn't be shocked to see Boston win another title in the next couple of years too.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. And that's a great point. I was bringing up defense. Like if you really saw Dallas against Minnesota, how they was running, how Dallas was running that high drag screen for Luka. Yep. And always it was a bit, he either had Cat or he had Gobert.
Yeah.
Every time. And then
they couldn't do anything with him. Yeah.
And then you just, Luka would eat you alive, right?
Yeah.
And I love how when Boston knew they were facing the same thing, they put Jason Tatum on Gafford.
Mm-hmm.
So when they ran that high pick,
got Tatum on
three. Yeah. Now Luka's like, uh oh.
I don't want that.
Why is Tatum here?
Yeah, I want a mismatch. Yeah.
Right. Well, like, shouldn't Al Horford be right here? Mm-hmm. Like, so I mean, they really was playing chess very well and making those adjustments and those quick defensive adjustments really well, and it was impressive.
The other thing I think that I want to get your perspective on how this works at the NBA level. I've seen friends of mine at lower levels of coaching install like a new offense where they'll have guys who can, they learn multiple positions in the offensive scheme. So the guards might learn 1 through 3, or the fours might learn what the threes and the fives also do. Like there's some expectation of them being able to play up or down, in that particular lineup. And it seemed like with Boston, you could kind of interchange White or Holiday, or you could interchange Tatum or Brown some amount offensively, or Horford and Porzingis. Like there was some of that. Like you couldn't do that with Dallas, I don't think. Like Gafford was never going to play. He's not interchangeable with what Derrick Jones Jr. was doing. Like, and Kyrie was never going to be able to interchangeable with what Derrick Jones Jr. was doing, or some other, like. So Boston had multiple guys that could play multiple positions on offense and defense, and they were all two-way guys. If I'm the Wizards, like that's going to be the resonating factor for me and how I'm looking at this draft. I wouldn't even consider a guy that can't guard multiple positions. I wouldn't even consider a guy that is only going to play one position potentially or one role for me offensively. I would want bigger, switchable guys who could do a lot of things and give me flexibility.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's why you look at it and you say, okay, who's the best pick for today's game?
Yep.
And today's game is changing every second. Just like when you watch the final, it just lets you know that today's game just changed again.
Yep.
And the NBA is a copycat league.
For sure.
Whoever wins the finals, every team prepares for what? That team. Last year when Denver won it, everybody started trying to get all these bigs for Jokic, right? Yeah. All right, well, now we have the big somehow reemerge again. Now he's important once more, right? So now with Boston, everybody's not only getting ready to try to say, okay, we got to build our team to beat Boston, but we also have to figure out what they're doing to win.
Mm-hmm.
And if you see, every role was, like you said, was interchangeable, right? They did have a big. They utilized their big, right, Porzingis when he was in there. But one thing they did when they went to go get a big, they would pick one who could shoot, pick one who could spread the floor, right? So so now you're going to start having to look for precise, like very niche pieces. Okay, he can do this, he can do this, he can do this, but also how well can he play without the ball in his hands? How well does he understand if he's on the elbow, it's these three reads. If he's on the wing, it's these three options and reads, right? Right. So that's where the game is going. So to me now, I'm looking for more versatility than anything, right? That's why I'm saying either Cesar or Mattis, because those the only two who can really work within a versatile system to me somewhere, especially Mattis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of the bigger guys. Like
Klingon, I just don't feel like
he's a drop big only.
Yeah, he don't fit today's game.
Right. Yeah, a valuable piece, but he can't be like one of the core, you know, three guys.
He's not going to change the validity of your team or change. He's not going to do anything for your team so spectacular, miraculous that you end up now going somewhere.
Yeah, no. I agree. I think a Castle can guard 1 through 3 for you and play a little bit on off ball. That helps. I think Risashe could probably guard 2 through 4. That helps. But then there's another, like the next couple guys are all guys that it's like, yeah, you know, there start to be more question marks about their two-way ness, and that's where I'd get a little dicey. So I think Josue asked us that question about what's the takeaway from this playoffs in terms of team building. Also, Jay Edge asked, take the reality of the Wizards needing talent out of every talent over everything out of the equation. If the goal is to maximize Jordan Poole, who is the big you would take in this year's draft? Is it still Sar? The first thing Jordan Poole said about guys he was excited playing with last year coming into the season was Daniel Gafford, because he wanted a rim running, lob catching, you know, vertical spacing threat. And then they didn't run that pick and roll with him at all until like right as Gafford was getting traded. They had finally tried a few times and it worked a little bit with Bagley and he wasn't quite as successful. I think Sar could be the Gafford role on steroids. So I think that would be a really intriguing sort of two-man option for them.
Well, I agree. I think Sar is that perfect guy to be a rim runner and live catching. But at the same time, when Gafford and Poole was there, Poole didn't really have a lot of facilitating responsibility.
Exactly. Yep.
So, you know, now Poole, just like Celtics, his responsibilities came more, but also his shots now, he's not taking as many shots. He's more of a limited player. Say, okay, we need you to do these things for the system for us to win, and it's working better. So now you get a rim runner, and you get a Poole in there the way he was playing at the last up season. Be perfect. So, yeah, I think a Sar would be that exact person.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. Similarly related, Catman of San Marcos asked, how do you go about projecting upside for players like Sar and Risashe, specifically as international guys? So for the Wizards at 2, having a high floor doesn't seem to be the point. This pick has to have star possibilities if the rebuild isn't going to take years and years. Still, how do you guys go about assessing the upside of these younger players? So for me, like, I don't think you're going to get a star. I think that comes in next year's draft. Not that you can't, but the chances of it are lower here. If you can just get a really good contributing long-term rotation piece, like, Sarr to me is probably only ever the third or fourth best player on a good team, if even if he hits like his ceiling. But that's still really valuable to me. I wouldn't call that a star. Like, is he going to be a max contract guy? I can't really see who that guy is from this group. So I would want somebody that's got a safe floor that they'll definitely contribute, but also still some ceiling. Like, they're, the Dalton Connects have a high floor, but a low ceiling to me. That doesn't make sense. A Sarr has a high floor, but still has some ceiling. So I think that's kind of how I would look at it.
I wouldn't be looking for a star.
Yeah.
So I'd be looking for some good players. Yeah. Right now, to me, if you put in a sound group of players that can really, really function together and make an impact, they're going to go somewhere without a star.
Mm-hmm.
And then you really, so, okay, fine, you start. And sometime within that function, the group of great players, a star emerges on his own.
Right. He could develop into that for sure.
Right. So, yeah, I think it would be a mistake to go out and try to get a star.
Yep.
And now you've seen everybody who has done that in the last few years, it turned out shitty. You know, Phoenix turned out shitty. You know, like, that don't work no more. Big three doesn't work anymore. Big two doesn't work anymore.
Build a cohesive team that fits together.
You need a cohesive team, because now you're not going to really beat the Celtics with two stars.
Right.
You need a cohesive team that functions on a string, offensively and defense.
And whatever guy they draft, I would be looking at guys that whoever that star is they eventually get, these guys kind of fit with them no matter what that is. Like, could you play a Ricochet off of Jokic? Yes. Could you play him off of Anthony Edwards? Yes. Could you play him off of Tatum? Yes. All those same things apply to Sarr as well. A Castle, like we just saw the value of a Drew Holiday, Derek White guard who can play off ball some, or create some offense for you some, and lock down another guy's, you know, top perimeter players. So, like, those are the guys to me that no matter what way your team builds out, they all kind of fit. I think if the best version of Modis, you know, hits that, he can do that as well too. So, like, those are the types of guys that would be interesting to me. These one position only kind of guys, like Klingon locks you in to playing a certain way. And let's say your eventual star is like a low post, you know, Embiid type. You can't play them together. So I would just want more future flexibility as I figured out what direction.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Should my team was going to go.
Yeah, right. Stars now dribble the ball 8 times in one position.
Yep.
You don't see that. You don't see it. It's going away. It's like, you want, look, you might, we need you to dribble 8 times per game.
Right.
And you might have, like, you know, so I think it's overhyped, and now the new stars are just different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, Klay Thompson is an interesting one, right? I've heard people say Risa Shea, you know, he can't dribble, so he has no value. It's like, I'm not saying he'll be Klay Thompson, but you saw how valuable a guy is that just moves off ball, and the gravity he brings just by being a knockdown shooter who plays high level defense. Like, there's still a really, you know, important role that that guy can fill on a lot of teams. And he didn't have to get in his bag or have these dribble combos to do it. It's, you know, you have to chase him at all times, and the movement and the positioning is also key too. So that's another thing that we're looking
at. The most ultimate star right now that you see, Steph Curry.
Yeah.
Remember how much he used to pound the ball.
Yeah.
Think about him now.
Yeah.
He may be only taking maybe 10 to 15 dribbles a game total.
He can do it. He doesn't have to rely solely on that.
And actually it's an easier game that way. So the star is a change.
I agree. Along those lines, Soju Saki asked, does Corey Kispert resign here? I think we talked about this a little bit a couple episodes ago. To me, again, I would want to prioritize two-way guys. We haven't seen a ton of growth from Corey defensively. I think he's more your off-the-bench shooting specialist. So I would offer him a contract that reflects that. And if he's on board with that, great. If he's looking for $15-plus million a year, that'd probably be too rich for my blood.
Yeah, to me, Corey Kispert, if he does, great. Yeah. You know, we definitely can utilize him.
Yeah, we need shooting. That helps.
We need shooting. But only thing he is to say, go out there and put up some shots. Mm-hmm. Right now, that's how I see him.
Yeah, I agree.
I can put up some shots, mm-hmm. right? And not two-way. Yeah. I don't really know how good he wants to be within the game, if mm-hmm. that makes any sense.
Yeah,
please. Right. You always been able to do this and you do it well.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to now have defense. We have to now, you got to read, you got to be a vocal leader. You have to be a slasher. You got to be a rebounder. You have to make the right, probably you may have to do a cut and get a quick one and then I'd swing it real quick to the right guy. All of those things to be what the Wizards want to be until he puts in his head that he has to completely embody those things.
Yep.
You can take him or leave him.
To me, he's like strictly a play finisher. In that, he's either hitting the three or he's attacking closeout. And he finished, like, his rim finishing this year was elite for a guy, you know, of his archetype. But he wasn't like skipping the ball to the next guy or creating for anybody else. We didn't see much stride on the defensive end. You mentioned the rebounding is kind of meh. Like, you got to give me one other thing at least. If I think you can create a little bit for somebody else or you can be, you know, better than average defensively, then we'll talk. And it could be, hey, like, he's in that same position Denny was in coming into this year. So maybe we see that growth and it just took a little more time. So I think this is a big year to decide what they're going to do next contract or not.
It all comes down to the trust factor.
That's fair.
Yeah. You know, do I trust you to, you know,
keep getting better? And
yeah, keep getting better.
Yeah. No, I think that's kind of the next big one, you know, is like, That's kind of the next impending contract domino for them. And they've gotten Kuzma on a good deal, Denny on a good deal. I think being able to get Corey on another really friendly team deal here would help them a lot too for future flexibility.
I don't know.
Okay. You don't know if they can get him on one, or you don't know if that's a good thing?
I don't know if you can bring somebody in with more versatility.
Okay. Not enough from him. So if you could get somebody that does more, is that better?
You're a younger guy with versatility,
yeah,
right? Think about it. Younger guy with versatility with a lot of upside that you can say, all right, well, we can easily make you do the things Corey was able to do.
If you draft Risa Shea, does he make him expendable?
All of these other things in your bag already.
Right.
That's a good point. You know, yeah. So if you find that guy,
mm-hmm.
then that doesn't mean it has to be a superstar or anything.
Yep.
Right? That fits, that piece fits in the same spot.
Sure.
And if that's not, how hard is that to find?
I think there's a couple of those guys in every draft that fit that sort of specialist role. It's a command scorer type. If you draft Reese Ishay, he's bigger Corey on offense, I think. You know, maybe not quite the same rim finisher yet, but he's also tall and skinny and will grow into that. And probably already a better defender. So, like, do you need Corey anymore? You know, on a cheap couple-year deal.
You're my point, baby.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you. I think that was
it. You know? He's not such a rare gem. He's effective.
Yeah.
He's effective in the box that he functions in.
Mm-hmm.
But we need the box much bigger now. Just if the Wizards want to be a great team or a contender,
mm-hmm.
we can't be. The box is too limited for Corey.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, well, I think they'll probably like give him the first month or two of the season here and see what some of that looks like, and you know, make a decision based on that. So that's going to be an interesting one. Switching gears here a little bit, the Wizards will be heading to Mexico City this year. They'll take on the Miami Heat for a regular season matchup sometime in November, which I think will be interesting to see. Johnny, did you ever play in any international cities in the NBA? And then in college, did you guys do a foreign trip? I guess, what's that like playing in front of international crowds?
In college, we didn't, but actually with the Wizards, we went to Mexico.
Oh, cool. City. Okay.
So
yep. How was that?
It was different. What was unique is the best arena in America, you know, is by far different than the best arena in Mexico.
Interesting.
You know? Okay. And so you feel it's just a different feel, but in the end of the day, it's basketball. You hear all these different sounds in the stands. You never heard like some kazoos or something. It's just, you know, they cheer for the wrong thing sometimes. But,
sure.
You know, what's cool about playing in those games definitely are the games, but it's all the things that you get to do before. You get to kind of see the city. You get to talk to, you know, have these banquets or things where you get on the podium and talk to everybody, and you get to interact with the NBA fans that's not in the U.S. And so you get to see another side of the NBA, like, internationally. Mm-hmm. And that's the coolest part, you know.
And you're helping grow the game, too, which is awesome.
Yeah, you're helping grow the game, but you also seeing how many people love the game outside of the U.S., like really, really love it. You know, they can't speak English, but they know everybody's name. They understand the game to a T. You know, it's the NBA is such an international game, and you really don't feel the pulse of it until you go outside of the U.S. and see how they embrace the game.
Yeah, that's a good point that I wouldn't have thought about. And I would like to see a game like that. I was also curious, and I didn't look this up beforehand. I want to say Eduardo Nájera is the only Mexican-born former NBA player. So I think for them, it'd be cool just to have kind of one of their own. I think that's the first thing that helps a country get a little more excited is to have, you know, that guy. So there's obviously more presence in Mexico. The NBA has a G League team, the Capitans that play down there too. So I think that'd be like the next big thing for them, maybe is to have one of their own. And you saw that with Canada, that kind of built up over time. And
yeah,
maybe Mexico is the next country to do that. So that'd be cool. Other kind of sad note, Jerry West passed away this week. Ever have any interactions with Jerry at all during your time in the league?
I did. Nothing to, just a sit down one-on-one type of thing.
Sure.
But just those small interactions that I had with him was so impactful because I knew who he was.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that I didn't get to watch him. I was too young to watch him. But I was, my main team ever before anything was the Lakers, right? I watched the Lakers all the time. So I knew all the history of Jerry West. I knew he was a guy on the NBA logos. So if you just grow up loving the NBA,
right,
and you finally meet the guy on the NBA logo,
yeah, that's cool.
That's like meeting It, you know, that's
it's like MJ thing. Level, right? Like, you know, like that kind MJ of iconic.
Yeah. It's MJ level. You're meeting the logo. So I was pretty much infatuated, you know, and fascinated by I met the logo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty awesome. For anybody who hasn't checked it out, if you need a book to read, his autobiography, West by West, is like one of the preeminent sports memoirs of all time. So I would suggest checking that out. Complicated dude with complicated history and stuff like that too. I think it's relatable stuff for most normal people out there too, to talk about, you know, what he went through. But the guy is like, I mean this like actually as a compliment, is like the ultimate loser in NBA history. In terms of like the only player to be finals or, you know, final four MVP on a losing team, finals MVP on a losing team. Like, you have to be so good to do that. Like, Zach Edey was a monster this year in the national championship game, and there was no world where they were going to give him final four most outstanding player. So like for West to have done that is pretty wild. And then to do it again as a pro is pretty wild.
Yeah. And just how passionate he was with the game to me.
Yeah.
I mean, he lived, eat, slept, breathed the game to the core, to, you know, just to read about and hear about how, like how the games would just make him, you know,
sick
for the entire, I'm like, man, I mean, I love basketball. I really do.
Yeah.
Maybe I don't like it that much. Maybe I need to figure this out to where it makes me sick.
Yeah.
But it feels, it's good to know that people have a passion for it. Like,
mm-hmm. I thought that was interesting too, how much he disliked his portrayal in Winning Time.
Oh yeah.
But
yeah, it makes sense though. I mean,
yeah,
people watch that shit too. Like,
I wouldn't either, but a lot of those stories, you're hearing people share them now. And it's like, they didn't just make all that shit up out of thin air. You don't want to see it acted out for the whole world, but.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And I think that's what it is. Because in the end of the day, like you said, if winning, losing in the finals makes you that sick all the way to me, to the point to where like you want to fight people outside and one person, like, if you can't say that you were that way.
Yep.
And then the portrayal of Winning Time is over-exaggerated.
Exactly, yeah.
You know,
both ways. Yeah.
Those two fit perfect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you would think that's the same person. And nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, if you love the game and like an NBA player, live, eat, slept the game and breathe, like everything is the core, and this game gave you everything you could even imagine.
Mm-hmm.
You cherish a player like Jerry West to react to the games like he did.
Yep.
You know, because it's the game, this game deserves that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's well said. I wish he had been a Wizards executive at some point during his tenure. When he went to Memphis, it was like, oh shit, us air quotes smaller market teams, maybe we can get guys like that, you know? So that's pretty cool. All right. Yeah. I just figured we had to mention that. So impactful to the game, and him and Bill Walton, and kind of in a month is a tough month for the NBA legends, but shout out to them and for all they did for the game. John, I think that's really all I have for us this week here. Anything you want to leave us with? Final prediction for the draft next week?
For the Wizards, is either I'm gonna go with Sar or Matas.
Okay.
I personally I like Sar too, but either those two, I'm fine.
Feeling modest now. He's the top pick, huh?
I mean, I like him.
Yeah.
I like him because I know he's like a Koulibaly.
Okay.
Where you can say, oh, this kid, he ain't going nowhere. He may not be the you know, Mr. Amazing right now,
mm-hmm.
but there's so much growth and upside and so much to work with. I like to know that, okay, I got a lot to work with. Right. And to me, he's the right guy. You just got a lot to work with.
The more I've been thinking about this too, him as an idea kind of makes more sense here. Like, I've kind of thought like they'd do maybe something outside the box here a little bit. And we've all had like conversations on like Wizards Twitter about like who is a Will Dawkins type of guy, who is an Oklahoma City kind of guy. Also, I've mentioned this on other shows too, like Travis Schlenk is also a factor here, and he's from Oklahoma, or he's from Golden State originally. And Golden State loved taking guys that had that high school pedigree that didn't necessarily pop in their 1 or 2 years of college, but they had that foundation of doing more and showing more. And it's kind of had mixed results for them. But if any of his influence kind of factors into who they draft, I think that also kind of sheds a little nudge in Modest's direction here too, of like, this is a guy who's a top three, probably, player in his high school class. So, could we be, hitting on a guy that has higher upside than we were able to see with the Ignite this year? So don't be shocked, Wizards fans, if that's the call sometime on draft night.
Yeah, I got a lot of upside. So, yeah.
Love it. All right, we'll see how they do. Everybody, you know the drill. Hit that little like button for us. Rate, review, subscribe. Again, we'll read all the 5-star reviews. So if you want to hear your name on the pod, feel free to leave us a little note on there as well. Presented by betonline.ag, and we will catch y'all next time.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.